You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 355 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Tuesday evening. The Atlanta Hawks were in action. I apologize for not having a show yesterday. I actually tweeted about this, but I had a show that was recorded and then lost to the internet world of technical difficulties, so I really apologize for that. I had some decent content, I thought, on that podcast, but not something that I was able to record again, so I figured we would just hold off until we came back for this recap show. And you know, it was a pretty entertaining game in some ways. It was not exactly a well-played game, but the Hawks fell to the Raptors by a final score of 106-90. And here we are to recap what transpired. Before that, the only bit of news that actually hit between our last podcast and today was the fact that the Hawks recalled both Josh Maget and Andrew White from the G League. Erie had a nice long break after a game over the weekend, and that allowed those guys to come back. Tyler Cavanaugh apparently not ready to come back just yet, although he did appear in the game for Erie off the bench, played 14 minutes. With that said, apparently was not healthy enough to come back, and the Hawks rode with Maget and White, although White did not appear at all in this game on Tuesday, and Maget only appeared in crunch time. So not as if those guys were necessarily, quote, needed, but at the same time, some insurance there because Malcolm Delaney was unavailable at point guard. That paved the way for Maget. And of course, with White, the Hawks are pretty shorthanded on the wing right now, so he did not play in this game because of Jalen Morris getting a lot of time. But just something to monitor in the near future, and that was the only piece of news between our last show and the game on Tuesday north of the border. So we can get into the game a little bit here. Of course, sort of as the backdrop here, the Raptors were 13-point favorites against the Hawks. And coming into the game, they were 26-2 overall against sub-500 teams on the season and 14-0 at home in that kind of situation. So basically, the Raptors have been very, very good at holding serve against bad teams this year. For three quarters, it seemed like that may not be the case here, honestly, because the Hawks played very. I won't say they played necessarily very well. I think Toronto played pretty poorly, and the Hawks competed at a high level. Mike Budenholzer, after the game, his interview was shown on Fox Sports Southeast, and he talked about how well he thought the team competed in those first three quarters. I can echo that from breaking the game down a little bit. I don't think that they played necessarily all that well, but did sort of bring a lot of energy from the opening tip, and that was enough to hang around with a Raptors team that was not playing overly well in its own right. The Hawks came out of the gates hot with an 11-4 lead to open the game. They actually ran this beautiful set offensively for a Kent Bazemore three off of the opening tip that worked out perfectly. And from there, that was very interesting. I thought the Hawks at least played well. In the first quarter, they had a 115 offensive rating. They shot 52% from the floor, and that provided quite a bit of early excitement in terms of the offense. There was a 13-2 run in the second quarter when the Hawks took an 8-point lead. They hit three triples in a row there. That was pretty interesting for the Hawks to get cooking in a little bit. Offensively, there was a small ball lineup in which Torian Prince played the four as Toronto was playing Pascal Siakam at the four in that second quarter. There was a weird sequence when Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan had technical fouls both near the end of the first half. And the Raptors did, though, sort of battle back. The Hawks took a one-point lead in the halftime after a Mike Muscala technical foul free throw. And despite the fact that the Raptors had a 36% offensive rebound rate in the first half, which is pretty, really bad in terms of the defensive rebounding statistics, but Toronto shot 35% from the floor before halftime, and the defense was pretty good aside from not being able to close possessions on the glass. There was nobody in double figures for the Hawks at the halftime break, but a lot of success in the starting five in general in that first half, and some pretty good balance offensively across the board. Toronto came out in the second half and sort of threatened to lay things down in terms of running away with the game. They scored the first 7 points, but the Hawks did battle back from there pretty admirably. I will say there was a weird flagrant foul in the third quarter with Kyle Lowry wrapping up John Collins without going for the ball. He was assessed with a flagrant foul. Malcolm Delaney, who's of course injured right now and was tweeting about the game, called it, and I quote, a dirty-ass play, end quote. So that kind of tells you all you need to know about how Hawks players will probably view that play. Malcolm, of course, was not playing in the game, but I'm sure his feelings were echoed, and they were certainly echoed by the internet. So that's something to keep an eye on in the future. You know, Lowry was ding there, might get a fine of some sort. It did not seem to be a pretty clean play there from Lowry. Aside from that, though, Collins was mercifully okay, and moving on from there. DeMar DeRozan had 7 straight points late in the third quarter to seemingly assert control, but the Hawks did finish that period on an 8-2 run, take a 1-point lead again into the fourth quarter, at the end of the third quarter, And but from there, the fourth quarter was all Raptors all the time. On the whole, the Raptors outscored the Hawks by a 30-13 margin in the fourth quarter. It was probably even worse than that, though. The Hawks did not reach double figures in the fourth quarter until after more than 10 minutes of action. It was a 28-8 run by the Raptors to open the fourth quarter. The Hawks just could not score and could not get stops. And frankly, that looked a lot like the way like a lot of people probably expected the entire game to go. DeMar DeRozan kind of did whatever he wanted to do. And offensively, things just sort of ground to a halt. In fact, I mentioned how good the offense was in the first quarter. For the entire game, the Hawks had a 95.3 offensive rating. They had 22 turnovers that led to 25 points for the Raptors. They shot 42% from the floor, 29% from three. That's not going to get it done at all. Sort of weirdly, the Hawks lost this game by 16 points, despite the fact that the Raptors shot 39% from the floor and 28% from three. But Toronto did not turn the ball over very often. And, of course, they had that awesome 35% offensive rebound rate to really sort of put that thorn in the side of the Hawks. They had 48 points in the paint, and that was enough for the Raptors to get the victory in this spot. So, overall, three quarters of positive basketball, I will say, because anytime you can play the Eastern Conference number one seed to a standstill for 36 minutes is a pretty good sign for the Hawks, and in some ways is a perfect outcome, as the Hawks, a lot of people are rooting for them to lose games right now. They played very well for three quarters in terms of competing, and then sort of let off the gas a little bit, at least in the way that the effectiveness. I think the Hawks still played hard in that fourth quarter, just couldn't get anything to fall. And the end result was a 16-point victory for the Raptors and a 16-point defeat for the Hawks. We can move on to the player portion of the podcast, as we always do in this space. If you're a new listener, we always kind of break things down from an overall sense, then sort of drill down on each individual player, at least briefly, on the podcast. And we'll start with the starting lineup in this game. Again, nobody cracked 14 points or more for the Hawks. Pretty crazy outcome there. But John Collins led the way with 14 points, as well as Kent Bazemore. Those two guys led the team in scoring. Collins, 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists in 29 minutes for John. 6 of 12 from the floor, 0 of 1 from 3. 2 of 2 from the free throw line. He was minus 6 in those 29 minutes. I thought Collins was pretty good here, despite the fact that the glass was a real problem throughout the game. Torian Prince and Dwayne Dedmon both had solid rebounding games, but Collins kind of struggled keeping guys off the glass. It's not all about him necessarily, obviously. It was a team effort to get beat as bad as they did on the offensive glass, but still, I thought John played reasonably well, but not great in this spot. Torian Prince, 29 minutes, 9 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 block shots. Had a really nice block, actually, on the backside rim protection in terms of as a help defender. But aside from that, didn't play very well here. It's pretty passive by his standards recently. There were times when he takes some really bad shots offensively, but at least he's being aggressive in this game. He's not really aggressive at all. That was frustrating to see it a lot of times. Dwayne Dedmon had a nice game, 12 points, 10 rebounds. 3 offensive, 7 defensive, was 4 of 6 from the floor, and 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Actually misses only 2 3-pointers. But in general, aside from that, I thought he played pretty well. Was plus 7 in his 27 minutes and a 16-point loss. That says a lot about the way that he played. Then a shooter, 11 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds in 28 minutes. He was 4 of 13 from the floor, 2 of 3 from 3. I didn't think Dennis played very well at all here, but he did defend at a reasonable level, held Kyle Lowry down. Lowry only had 4 points for the Raptors. So definitely a pretty surprising outcome there. Although Fred VanVleet also struggled off the bench with 4 points. So that point guard tandem did not do a whole lot of damage for the Raptors, but of course it ended up not mattering necessarily. But Schroeder did play reasonable defense by his standards. Offensively, did struggle a little bit, and that's worth noting. Finally, Bazemore, we mentioned a second ago, 14 points, 5 assists, 2 steals. Was not nearly as dynamic as he was in the game on Sunday. At the same time, Bazemore was efficient, 6 of 8 from the floor, 2 of 3 from 3 is, a very efficient performance, minus 4. Defensively, he gave DeRozan some fits in the first half, to be sure. DeRozan got loose in the second half. That was not all Bazemore by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought he played reasonably well as well. We can move on to the bench. Mike Muscala, 5 points, 1 rebound, 1 steal in 19 minutes. All 5 of his points came at the free throw line. He was pretty passive here. I didn't think Mike played particularly well by his standards. Miles Plumlee, 9 points, 9 rebounds in 14 minutes. Was 4 of 9 from the floor. Plumlee taking more shots taking the fourth more shots in the team. Only exceeded by John Collins, Dennis Schroeder, and Tyler Dorsey is pretty surprising. Although they were all around the rim, but not very efficient. KL Shenar made a good point, actually, that I wanted to echo on the podcast as to just how good of an athlete Plumlee is. I actually would echo that. I make fun of the quote sneaky athletic thing when it comes to white big men, especially. But I do think Plumlee actually is a very good athlete. I think people assume that he's an absolute stiff because he's not necessarily that good. But at the same time, you know, I think Plumlee is a pretty underrated athlete just from a pure sort of burst and athleticism standpoint. You can see that more or less when he dunks and makes some highlight plays around the rim. Of course, that does not mean that he's a good basketball player necessarily in terms of by NBA standards. But, you know, Plumlee is not useless by any stretch of the imagination. And he is pretty athletic for a guy who probably is not accredited as such. Moving on to Isaiah Taylor, a rough night at the office for Isaiah, 1 of 7 from the floor, 2 assists and only one turnover, but was -5, but just didn't have much going offensively in the spot. No shame in that, because you know a lot of guys in this game had rough offensive games, but Isaiah just didn't have it going here. Josh Majette came in for the final 3 minutes of the game, committed a turnover, had an assist and a steal, no points, did not attempt a shot, looked fine, but it was pure garbage time by the time he appeared in the contest. Tyler Dorsey, 25 minutes, was 4 of 13 from the floor, tied with Dennis Schroeder for the team lead in field goal attempts. So he was not shy at all in this spot. 0-4 from 3, though, was -21, had actually fouled out of this game, 10 points, 3 rebounds. I thought Dorsey was pretty brutal, honestly, had a couple of nice moments, but very inefficient and probably a little bit too aggressive at times. Jalen Morris finally was the last guy the Hawks played in this game, 4 points. 5 rebounds, 2 assists, played some quality defense. He was -13 in 20 minutes. I think still Morris is a guy that I'm really enjoying watching. You know, the jump shot is the problem. I mentioned that a couple of times already on the podcast, but if he could shoot even at a reasonable rate, I think he'd be an NBA player. We'll see if that can take shape in the near future. His 10-day contract will be coming to an end soon. I'm expecting the Hawks probably to send him time to a second 10-day contract. Nothing necessarily definitive on that, but because he's been playing so much and so, you know, at least relatively well. And the fact that he played ahead of Andrew White here is probably significant. You know, White, I think, is a better prospect because of his length and the fact that he can shoot it, obviously, a lot better than Morris can, but you know Morris is probably a better player in terms of right this second because of the way that he can really defend and bring a lot of energy. I think the Hawks are treating him that way is that they probably trust him a little bit more right now, and we'll see how that manifests in the future if and when he is actually still on the roster as the season moves along. So again, you know, 16-point loss. It was a lot closer than that for the Hawks. If you do not watch this game, I would encourage you to watch the first 3 quarters. The fourth quarter, not so much as that things got out of control in a hurry, but a pretty encouraging effort for the Hawks through 36 minutes, and that's something you could take away for the future. You know, the next game the Hawks have is on Friday in Indiana, so a nice 2-day break here on the road. We'll have podcast content between now and then, but no game content until then, of course. And then the Hawks come back for their next home game is going to be on Sunday. So a lot of things to watch when it comes to the tanking race around the league, all that fun stuff. In fact, Peachtree Hoops, a good friend of the program, Sam Meredith, is going to be doing a daily post on PeachtreeHoops.com about the tanking race, and of course, the Minnesota Timberwolves keeping an eye on that as well. So basically all of the Atlanta Hawks draft implications will be checked in on every single day from Sam. So if you're definitely into the tanking race, I would encourage you guys to check that out, as well as everything else at PeachtreeHoops.com, where I am the editor-in-chief, and I have a really, really great staff there led by Jeff Siegel and Graham Chappell, Sam, Greg Willis, Glenn Willis, all the crew. Those guys have been great all season long, so I would encourage you guys, if you like the audio content and listen to the podcast, please check out the written content as well, and video breakdowns, all that fun stuff that we do on the site. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody. I really appreciate the new listeners as well. If you've not done this, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play or TuneIn Radio, however you like to listen to podcasts. We're also on Spotify, and every single podcast has a post on Peachtree Hoops, as I mentioned before, a little bit of a written outline of what you can expect on the pod. So thanks for listening, as always, everybody, and I really appreciate your ministry in terms of that, and we will see you guys later on in the week.